Right, I'm here with Tom Pyer and Jamal Igle of Ahoy Comics. And you guys will be able to see on the site by this time the panel that they did yesterday. And during the panel, they mentioned this series they've got called The Wrong Earth. And this book really spoke to me because you guys have taken what's something that both comic book readers love and hate, which is the way that the characters have evolved, plus a Crisis on Infinite Earth type thing, and combined it into one comic. So first of all, where'd you guys get the idea for it?
You know, that's always a really difficult question to answer, but I've been carrying around this idea for maybe a year or so before I started working on it. And and when we started to do Ahoy Comics, I thought I would really like to do this here free of like sort of big company controls and not stepping on the toes of other characters and editors and stuff. We could just tell our story. So I told Jamal about it, and Jamal had a million of his own ideas too, and it would have been very different had we not done it together and had we not done it at Ahoy. Mm.
Do you have anything?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like Tom said, what happened was Stuart Moore, who is the writer of Captain Ginger and handles ops for Ahoy, we live pretty close together. We actually used to work together on Firestorm and Nuclear Man over at DC Comics. So I bumped into Stuart in front of my favorite pie and muffin place, and he said Tom Pyer had this project that he wanted to talk to me about, and would I be interested in listening to. And like, I've been a fan of Tom's for years and years and years, and I most recently just read Captain Kidd, his Captain Kidd series over at Aftershock, and I was just like, okay, I'll entertain. And when I talked to Tom on the phone and he told me the basic pitch, I was like, this would be too much fun to turn down. So yeah, we started working on stuff and trying to figure out the characters and, you know, and everything, and it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
And I'll just recap here, just in case someone hasn't seen the panel on the other page. It's about a Golden Age hero and a, would you say modern hero that have swapped places, so that the Golden Age hero is in a modern comic book and the modern hero is in a Golden Age comic book. And I think yesterday you were talking about you started with the modern guy and worked backwards for the costume.
Right.
So... What was that process like, where you started with a really gritty, really almost overly muscular guy, and you kind of end up with a guy that almost looks like the Tick in a way?
Well, kind of. I mean, my idea really was to, because we were going back and forth on how we wanted to approach it, and for a while I was thinking, you know, what if I went really, really cartoony with Earth Alpha, which is the world that Dragonfly Man comes from. But then I decided that wasn't the approach that I needed to take. I needed to play everything straight. So we started with Dragonfly, who's the darker version of our main hero. And a lot of his influences come from, you know, modern comic books, looking at stuff like, you know, the Batman costume designs from the movies, and then Japanese anime like, you know, Gatchaman or Moldiver, and, you know, a few other things where they have like the more skin tight suits and everything. But I didn't want to give him either of them really traditional superhero masks with like blanked out eyes or anything. So they've got helmets and gauntlets and goggles, and, you know, there's mechanics to the way that everything works. So once I figured out what Dragonfly was supposed to look like, how he carries himself, his attitude, like how much more muscular he is than Dragonfly Man, who is more physically, for me, more based on older bodybuilders like Steve Reeves or Clint Walker, who's Cheyenne, the TV cowboy Cheyenne, and, you know, that sort of like barrel-chested, more, you know, kind of old school, you know, muscle, as opposed to, you know, Dragonfly Man, who's much more cut, and, you know, and darker. So I took the Dragonfly Man costume, and I started looking at a bunch of different things. I started, you know, older, like 40s superheroes, even 60s superheroes, you know, characters like Spy Smasher,
old movie serials like Daredevil's The Red Circle, you know, that sort of thing. You know, so that's where the goggles and the gloves and the gauntlets and the belt and the one piece, the onesie, basically. And so it was really, I didn't want them to be so radically different from each other. I wanted them to echo the other, but be different enough so that you instantly know that this is not that version of that character that's on the right planet. But at the same time, nobody else in the story seems to realize that they're, you know, even in different costumes. Like, they just assume that it's just the same guy. Like, he's just somehow changed suddenly. So
in your universe, is he like a top tier hero or a mid tier hero?
Oh no, he is in Earth Alpha. He is the number one crime buster. He is the duly deputized officer of the law. You know, straight, you know, upright, virtuous. You know, the whole nine yards. And then on Earth Omega, he is very much, you know, the prototypical dark vigilante character that we've come to embrace over like the last 20 years. He's, you know, there's a little bit of the Punisher in him. There's a little bit of, you know, Batman in him. But, you know, he is his own character. I think the big thing about one of the big differences between Dragonfly Man and Dragonfly, as, you know, Tom and I talked, I just decided Dragonfly is just tired. He's been fighting this fight for so long, and he just doesn't care. You know, he doesn't want his fights to last too long. He does whatever he can to, you know, to finish things quickly and move on.
He'll set you on fire.
Exactly. He'll beat you with a flaming baseball bat.
He will, because he's tired. It's got to get over.
So in our world, right, we've got two types of characters. We've got characters where from the Golden Age to the modern times, they're completely different. Like the Flash, right? The Flash with the, you know, the helmet and all that versus the new Flash. But then you've got characters like Superman that have kind of remained, I mean, they've definitely evolved, but there's a core that's remained.
Right, there's a constant that remains.
Yeah, what kind of hero is Dragonfly Man, Dragonfly? If that's a way that you thought of it, and if not, how did you think of the evolution?
Well, it's interesting because they're both, in our thing, both versions are happening at the same time so that they can interact. It's not like, although it's based on the evolution of heroes, you know, the way I always explain it is, if you look at a hero's chest symbol and you think about what it stands for, if you are a certain age and older, it might stand for civic responsibility and helping the less fortunate. And if you're younger, the same symbol might stand for bloody vengeance and stick it to the man.
Right.
It's just changed over time. But it's funny, they're still kind of selling the same product in the same packaging, but it's kind of a different product now. Yeah. And I just find that interesting.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you can take any character like, say, Batman, and, you know, one of the things that, one of the criticisms people had of the 1989 Batman movie is he lets the Joker die. And
that's not the only character he lets die in that movie.
Oh, he sets off that bomb in the factory.
That's right. You know, it's like, it's over at that point once, you know, twin Gatling guns pop out of the Batmobile, you know.
Yeah. I think the best Batman stories for me is when he's vulnerable and brave.
Right.
And when he's behind like $1 billion worth of armor and blowing people up, it's not as good for me.
Well, it's kind of like punching down when you think of it.
It's really punching down. And like that first episode of Batman the Animated Series when Man-Bat starts to fly away and Batman just bravely, stupidly, like takes his bat line
and he's just holding on to him,
wraps
as he's
it around
flying across
and he's being dragged. He's got no plan. He just knows he can't let him get away.
Right.
And he's risking everything. And then the next episode, he's like in the Batplane dropping bombs on people. It's like, it's just not as good.
Yeah, I think the way you write your superhero changes the critique of the superhero, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there is a Batman that is just completely defensible by his sick, and there's just the Batman who's investigating, you know? And
right.
It really depends on the author.
Right, absolutely.
And we're talking about Batman a lot, but this is a parody of an awful lot of characters.
Yeah.
This is, we're not trying to sell you a Batman comic, lawyers.
Well, of course.
But
So actually, interestingly enough, yesterday I also went, or maybe it was the day before, I also went to the panel for the Liberty Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not doing the same thing, but what tickled my brain is they're using public domain characters from the 40s.
Uh-huh.
And you guys are taking inspiration for Dragonfly Man from the Golden Age, and it's just interesting to me.
Well, it's a combination. It's Golden Age and Silver Age.
Yeah.
I think
he sort of
evolves over the course of the series during his time on Earth Omega, where he kind of starts out very Golden Age-y, and then starting with issue two, he becomes much more of like a Denny O'Neill, Marshall Rogers sort of version.
Yeah.
You know, very, more.
He's in a rougher world.
Yeah, you know, more. He's more on the ball than you would think he was with his initial introduction.
Well, he's Dragonfly Man.
Exactly,
he's
adapts.
Completely on the ball. There's nothing he can't do.
So one of the things you guys mentioned at the panel is naivete versus gritty. What else do you think says, you know, Golden Age to you? What says modern to you?
Oh, all right, naive versus gritty. The attitude toward authority.
Yeah.
Golden
and
Silver Age heroes are completely, especially Silver Age, utterly accepting of and obedient to authority.
Yeah, I believe Superman was deputized at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all those guys. Even, you know, Thor comes to Earth, and the first thing he can think of to do is uphold our property laws,
right.
You know, stop bank robbers. Why would Thor care about our property laws? But he does,
right?
Because
right,
they're laws,
right.
And he's a good guy. But now, you know, after say 1984 or so, they started to be a little more suspicious of authority. There's more corrupt authority figures in the comics.
Well, there's a line of cynicism that went through that still kind of permeates our society, unfortunately, in a lot of ways. I don't think that really necessarily ever went away, but I think a lot of what it is that we have seen so many examples of, you know, corruption, you know, in our public figures and, you know, the public trust being abused, you know, more often than we would like. So that gets reflected in everything, you know, not just, you know, comics or, you know, television or film, but there's a line through our society in general because of that. So I think that was part of the overall evolution, you know, even from the Silver Age, because you see a direct line, like, there's a cutoff at, like, I guess, like 1982 or 83, where things really start to kind of go really, not left politically, but left in terms of, you know, what we traditionally believed were, you know, the moral values of society, as opposed to what people consider to be more realistic assessment of, you know, getting away from the nuclear family, for example, getting away from the, you know, the absolute sort of kowtowing to public and civic authority, you know, questioning everything. And I don't think there's anything wrong with questioning
especially authority.
Yeah, exactly.
Authority figures are less protected than they used to be in the culture too.
Right.
They used to just get away with absolutely everything by virtue of being white and male.
Well, I think they also had much more protection from the media and the news.
Yeah, they really did.
And there was sort of this partnership with people in power and people in the news media to sort of keep up that appearance.
And then the news became all about money.
And sensationalism around the same time, you know, early 80s. So.
Yeah.
So a couple other world-building questions I had as I was just thinking about this. Is there a team aspect? Is there like a Justice League or an Avengers or something in the book?
No.
No.
Just concentrating on these two Earths and these two versions of this one hero.
And his villain as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are also other villains that populate this world.
There are other villains too that we'll see. But the main villain is called Number One, and he's like one version's kind of an old-fashioned villain who plans these themed crime sprees. But because he's a narcissist, the theme is always him.
Yeah.
And then the Omega Universe version of Number One is he's just... He's a guy who likes to cut people up with knives, basically, because that's what Omega versions do. And he likes to pose a lot. He likes to stand in the shadows, looking dangerous. Yeah. He likes that kind of attention.
He lists, you know, when I draw him, he never really stands up straight. He just always sort of like leans to the side, like he's on a kind of like a heroin high.
He's a little high. He's always at least a little high.
Yeah.
That sounds like it must be a lot of fun to draw.
It is. It was interesting because, again, you know, the same thing with Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man, and trying to figure out how each version. Wait, what's up, Luke?
I missed you like every time this weekend. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, you too. Catch up to you soon.
All right, man. Sorry. So, like I was saying, it's interesting to try and figure out the body language for each character, where Alpha Number One is much more foppish in his movements and how he carries it, much more exaggerated, and it's, you know, prone to outbursts of indignation. How dare you ignore me?
Right.
Where Omega Number One is much more sinister in his movements, much more snake-like, and you know, I modeled him a little bit on Tim Roth, a little bit on Gary Oldman, you know, in The Professional, a little bit of Alan Cumming in Cabaret, so it's sort of like that combination of those three performances is kind of where my number, like Omega Number One, comes from.
Nice.
Your hashtag backup, does it appear in this book?
No, it's in the back of High Heaven, hashtag danger. It's also in the back of Captain Ginger with different art. Chris Geruso does it in the back of High Heaven, and he's got this wonderful, hilarious, adorable cartooning style. And then Randy Elliott draws it in the back of Captain Ginger in sort of a straight-faced, realistic style. But the characters are still a-holes.
Well, it's funny. As you were describing it, it kind of seemed to me almost like a deconstruction of Fantastic Four is what it seems like.
It's all those group science heroes, you know, like Thunderbirds, Fantastic Four, Challengers of the Unknown, Sea Devils, you know, the Cave Carson Insider crew, and the Rip Hunter Time Master crew.
Yeah.
All those people,
like the original Secret Six.
They weren't like super. They didn't have superpowers, but they would go on those adventures anyway, and they always wore uniforms. And I don't know why you always have to wear a uniform when there's just three of you.
Yeah.
I recommend to everyone in the world the Black Hawk movie serial of the 1940s.
Because I've seen it, actually.
When you watch it, you see seven men living on an island together, always in uniform. And it doesn't seem weird in a comic book, but boy, when you see it in a movie, you wonder.
Cool. Well, do you guys have any last things you'd like for people as they're considering picking up The Wrong Earth or any of the other Ahoy titles?
Well, we want to be entertaining. We want you to laugh. But it's not like jokey comedy, but there's an absurdity to everything we do, and we're just more about stories than we are about events and crossovers and stuff like that. We'll never stop a story, but because something's happening in a different book, we will never ever do that. And you'll get the complete story that the person wanted to tell at Ahoy.
I'm sad there won't be tons of cats all over The Wrong Earth.
We are gonna. I think Edgar Allan Poe is gonna make an appearance in High Heaven.
Oh yeah, I think that could work.
But it's not gonna be a story stopping crossover.
Cool. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.